socially we're more a more collectivistic society than individualistic, right? Understanding of privacy or why it's important is not very widespread. If I talk about, let's say, my parents, right, or my grandparents, they're like, oh, we have nothing to hide, so, you know, we don't particularly care about our privacy or how our data is used. I have nothing to hide. I have no secrets.
One thing is very clear, that these AI platforms take a lot of your data, take a lot of data as available in the public domain to be able to train themselves. And therefore, it's important, number one, that our public presence should be as to what we should look like or what we believe we should look like. Not everything which is available with us or which we believe is sensitive to us should be made public. The law, by the way, permits something which you make available to be used for training purposes. The other important factor is, particularly in the context of Gen AI, because that's one which is the most prevalent as of today, the way we ask questions, the prompts. And therefore, it's important that as the users of such AI platforms, we avoid personal details being shared.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Security Chips podcast by Data Security Council of India. Today, we have a very exciting guest joining us. We have with us Mr. Rakesh Maheshwari, who is a former senior director and group coordinator for the Cyber Law and Data Governance Division at the Ministry of Electronics and Information Technology, METI. He worked at METI for over 35 years on a variety of digital and cyber policy domains, including on the IT Act, the Aadhaar Act, data protection regulation, and cybersecurity policies, amongst a host of other things. Welcome, sir. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Shivangi ji.
Sir now continues to act as an independent expert in the tech policy space in India. So we're very excited to have him. And we'll, over the next 30 minutes or so, we'll be talking about what, sir, your role was, your experience was working in the government in shaping digital policy for India. You know, how you see the data protection regulation has evolved over the years and where India is in its journey on privacy regulation. And I think at the end, I also want to talk about the socio-cultural aspects of privacy, right? Because data protection regulation is a hot topic, but socio-culturally in India, how do we think about privacy? How do we improve privacy maturity, awareness for privacy amongst, you know, the common Indian internet user? So I want to talk about all of that with you. I'll start with, you know, your work at METI. So in the past, in the podcast, we've had guests join us who are a part of think tanks, academia, research, industry as DPOs working in privacy. You are our first guest who has, you know, experience on the policy making side of things. So I want to know, what was day-to-day work like at METI for you? And what part of the job did you find the most rewarding? And what was the most challenging parts of it for you over, you know, the 3 decades that you worked there?
So thank you for having me here. My experience in government, while it is more than 35 years, the fact is that as far as cyber law and cyber law related work is concerned, I have practically devoted around 8 years in cyber law. I'm not a cyber lawyer, and therefore the initial days were really challenging, understanding the law, understanding the judiciary and the processes which are being followed by them, the cases that we had, and a good number of cases are always there in terms of PIL. While working in the cyber law division, we realized that while there are many stakeholders, the voice of the citizen is actually coming from the parliament, from the parliamentary committees, from the grievances that we receive. And that's an important factor, and that was an important factor for us to consider, in addition to the lawyers, to the consultants, to the policy advocacy teams that we, of course, continue to meet. So, in a way, I was fortunate that as head of cyber law for most of the time, that I had the access to all such stakeholders. I was also the designated officer for 69A, the group coordinator for cybersecurity functions, and to that extent had a reasonable 360-degree view of what are the related issues in the area of cyber or what impacts stakeholders in general. I was also fortunate that it was during my tenure that we floated the idea of carrying out a comprehensive amendment in the IT intermediary rules. The process, of course, started in December 2018 and culminated in February 2021 when we came up with a comprehensive IT intermediary guidelines and digital media ethics code rules of 2021. And in a way, that was like a changing moment. It was like a paradigm shift that we had in the way the online intermediaries, and particularly the social media intermediaries, are regulated in this country. I do believe that by virtue of these rules, it definitely did give me the recognition of what my personal contributions were, what government's contributions were. Of course, we carried out later on amendments to these rules in 2022, which introduced the concept of Grievance Appellate Committee. Later on in 2023, which introduced the way the online gaming intermediary and online gaming platforms shall be regulated.
Mm-hmm.
But we also carried out certain amendments in the Act during this period.
Mm-hmm.
Schedule 1 was amended, which in a way brought a lot of flexibility in terms of improving business. We also had an amendment in the IT Act through the Jan Vishwas Bill, which was also aimed to improve the ability or improving the way the business is done. So making it less, reducing the crimes. And in fact, all the aims were meant to improve and help or ease of doing business.
Sir, you mentioned early on about, you know, how you looked to the parliament to contribute the voice of the citizen, right? And there were, of course, other stakeholders that you heard out whenever any decision making was happening. I want to, you know, dig deeper a bit into that. How does decision making happen at, you know, because you worked at Metis, I'll take the example of Metis in digital policy making. So there is obviously a large volume and also a large variety of stakeholders that you have to listen to on any digital policy issue. If I talk about, let's say, DSCI, right, we are an industry body with members across so many different industry sectors. It could be PSUs in the power and energy sector to banks and insurance companies. Not all of their interests will always align. So in your role at Metis, when you were in that decision-making role, how did you carry out this balancing act? What, you know, sort of mental framework did you use for making those decisions that, okay, I've received 30 different opinions on, let's say, a data protection regulation or something like an intermediary guidelines, 15 of which are contradictory and conflicting with each other. So how did you make those decisions?
Yeah. So first of all, I was not in a decision-making position, but most of the time in a maybe as an initiator of the proposal, sure, or maybe making recommendations with respect to that particular issue. Definitely, the guiding principles are that you have to keep the citizen first. So, and that's where the role of parliament, the role of judiciary, the role of grievances does play an important role as to what are the key issues. There are parliament questions which do indicate the mood of the country, the mood of the people. There are parliamentary standing committees, the joint parliamentary committees. Few times there were ad hoc committee also. There was one ad hoc committee on curbing of obscenity in the internet. There were good number of cases relating to, say, child sexual abuse material or maybe extreme obscenity, particularly the woman. So such cases actually enriched you to be able to, or gave the direction to be able to really think through as to what should be done? So these things in a way helped. Of course, we were also having an interaction, and government does interact with a good number of ministries, particularly because the cyber touches almost everybody. So we had the interaction with Ministry of Home Affairs, Ministry of Information and Broadcasting, Ministry of Finance, DOPT, Department of Legal Affairs. So all these, Department of Telecommunication. So there are inputs coming from these sides also.
I'm also curious to hear in what ways does Métis think about direct citizen engagement, right? Like Parliament as a representative of citizens is one aspect, but then also direct citizen engagement, how does that happen, or does that happen at all?
So in addition to what I mentioned, we, while particularly framing the IT intermediary rules, because that is something which impacts almost every netizen, almost every, in fact, user living in the country and may not be a direct, I'll say, user of the internet, and also the companies which are either operating in India or are providing services in India in whichever capacity they are. So for all these things, we always made good number of consultations wherein not only these companies, but civil societies, policy advocacy groups, research, think tank. So it is this, I'll say, indirect engagement, particularly in the context of citizens, that we were able to understand. Of course, we are always guided by our seniors, the political bosses, who definitely are into the field and have a wider knowledge of what the concerns of the public are. I believe this is how any government department does pick up, and particularly Ministry of Electronics and IT, which does not have a direct interface with the citizen, except via the grievance portals and other things, that we were able to reasonably capture the intent of the citizen and hence try to make a balance between what the expectations of the different stakeholders are.
So that really helps, you know, set some context for how Métis thinks about balancing all of these different requirements. We talked a bit about, we talked a lot actually about the intermediary guidelines and your role there in framing all of that. I want to shift gears a little bit and now move on to data protection, right? From, let's say, when you joined Métis and you started working at the Cyber Laws and Data Governance Division, to where we are now in February of 2025 with the law having been enacted in 2023, we now have a draft version of the rules that's currently undergoing public consultation. How do you think policymakers' thinking, or Métis' thinking, or the government's thinking has evolved on the issue of regulating personal data in India, right? So basically what I'm asking is, in hindsight, sitting here now in 2025, how do you view that journey of how we have arrived at the DPDP Act, you know, some of its core principles? And do you have, you know, maybe any major misgivings about where we seem to be headed in terms of data protection regulation?
Yeah. So first of all, principles of privacy, principle of data protection are already imbibed in the IT Act and the SPDI rules, significant sensitive personal data protection rules of 2011. So they're already there, but they were covering, one, the sensitive personal data. Two, they were applicable only with respect to body corporate. So in terms of scope and in terms of, I mean, either way, the scope of data or scope of industries which are covered were limited. But this is the law which in a way has already enabled almost every company providing services in India to have a privacy policy in place. Principles of what we are seeing today in the present data protection law were already imbibed into those sections of the Act and the rules. We were also keenly observing the Puttuswamy case, which was being heard in Supreme Court, and anticipating that the privacy will be considered as a fundamental right. Government on 31st of July 2017 itself constituted an expert committee headed by Justice B.N. Shrikrishna. And that's how, in a way, a formal journey, particularly relating to privacy protection and hence protection of personal data in the digital world, started. The principles, once again, are the ones, which are universal across the country. So per se, nothing much new here. But definitely some of the issues which always remained in the mind of the committee were the classification of data, the cross-border data flow, safety and privacy of children. There are also certain cases of legitimate uses by the government, and therefore, while the government has the legitimate right, particularly some functions of the government have the legitimate right to be exempted, as to what checks and balances should be made so as to ensure that there is everybody works within the contours of what is considered as the reasonable and right. Of course, in between, there were dilemmas as to how the regulator should be empowered, how much the regulator should be empowered, what should be the policy with respect to the non-personal data, because non-personal data and personal data almost go together. There was a curious case that when the bill was finally going to the parliament, it was November of 2019. We had released the draft of intermediary rules in December 2018. The rules were unfortunately not coming through. And that's where we introduced, at the very last moment, possibility of regulating social media also through the then privacy bill, which resulted into a bit of chaos as we progressed, because the JPC, because of the COVID in between and the Joint Parliamentary Committee not being able to submit the report. In the meantime, the rules also came. So it resulted into a bit of, I'll say, problems. But I do believe that the present Data Protection Bill, and the present Data Protection Act, which has finally come, has taken away the social media aspect, particularly the content-related aspects of the social media in social media. And also, because there were feedback about the non-personal data, it was only one statement which was written in the 2019 bill, that government realized that this is something which should be taken up in a comprehensive manner, and preferably through a different legislation, or maybe through the Digital India Act amendment, which was also being considered at the time. So I do believe journey is always evolutionary, particularly in such areas which are fast changing, where requirements are changing. Fast technologies are coming fast. So it's an evolving thing. I also know that even the present act may not be fully meeting all the requirements, but that's how the ball gets rolling. And I'm sure, in time to come, ideally such kind of technology laws, though they may be technology agnostic, the fact remains they are impacted because of technologies. They should get amended quite regularly.
Fair enough, sir. I think the point on the evolutionary nature and why these sort of regulations require, going back to them again and again and maybe revisiting and reevaluating their relevance is important. But given that where we stand now with the Act, and let's say, possibly this version of the draft rules, if we assume that, not significant changes will happen whenever we see the final version, how do you see industry preparedness, let's say, for implementing this shift from the SPDI rules in the IT Act and its limited applicability to now a more comprehensive digital personal data protection law? How do you see industry preparedness for that is one part of my question. And secondly, how do you foresee this, and do you foresee this materially changing how businesses function online and how the individuals, right, users of the internet or users of digital services like you and I, how we have our digital interactions in India? How do you see that materially changing?
Yeah, so if I can quickly classify, I mean, there are companies which are working from outside India, maybe in multi-geographic situation, which are already experiencing and have the right experience in terms of implementing various privacy laws across whichever jurisdiction they are present. Then there are companies which are operating only within India, maybe small companies, maybe large companies. And then, by the way, this law is also applicable to government organizations unless they are specifically exempted. So it is the larger companies or the one which are working in different jurisdictions. Of course, they have to tune themselves to the specific requirements which the Indian law has presented to them. But in fact, it will be a paradigm shift for the government organizations as well as the Indian companies. But I'm sure, I mean, a lot of awareness has already been created by virtue of the decision of the Supreme Court itself, by virtue of the incidents which do happen in the cyber world, and overall, I'll say, understanding of the issues of the cyber world by the people, that the level of what the privacy expectations of the citizen or of the users in India has really gone up. And to that extent, it appears, I mean, the government so far has been committing that there will be reasonable time window being made available to the companies to be able to implement the law. The way I have interacted with few of them so far, or in general gathering as to how exactly it's being done, people have already started working towards implementations. Certain principles are always, I mean, are the same. The law is already there. The intent of the law is already known. Of course, rules will always give more clarity in terms of how exactly implementation should take place. So I'm sure, I mean, people have started their journey. And if there is a reasonable time window, people will be reasonably prepared also. And the way also the law has been written, the rules have been written, they also provide reasonable opportunity for stakeholder which is genuinely interested in enhancing privacy to be given certain opportunities in case they falter, but they are serious about it. And to that extent, this is like a collaborative journey, a journey which has to be taken together. And I'm sure people also in the meantime will continue to become aware, more and more aware with respect to their privacy rights. And the government also will become more and more sensitive to what their rights are and what their obligations are. So I do believe that by the time this law actually becomes fully operational, companies would have, government would have got reasonable time window to be able to implement it in the right earnest. And I also believe the Data Protection Board, as and when it comes up, and definitely it will come up before the law becomes operational and will also be fully operational, will also be logical enough to take a very pragmatic view of things as and when they are expected to take certain calls on those aspects.
Sir, I'm going to sort of, again, dig deeper on the awareness part of it, right? We've talked about the law, we've talked about the rules and how you think, you know, the application of it will happen and what the level of preparedness is like for the industry and the government. But going back to citizens, right, at the end of the day, the intent of the law is to protect and to equip the average citizen of the country with privacy. Now, I'll come to the socio-cultural aspects of privacy in India. I want to talk about that a little bit because socially, we're more a more collectivistic society than individualistic, right?
Yeah.
So that understanding of privacy or why it's important is not very widespread. If I talk about, let's say, my parents, right, or my grandparents, they're like, oh, we have nothing to hide. So, you know, we don't particularly care about our privacy or how our data is used. I have nothing to hide. I have no secrets. So given that, how do you think as a society in India, how can we move forward towards a more privacy-aware citizenry or more privacy-conscious attitudes? I would love some advice on what DSCI you think what DSCI should be doing, or other similarly placed entities, or as individuals, as communities, what should we be doing to improve privacy awareness in the country?
See, this is something you have rightly conveyed. It's a socio issue. It also goes with the general awareness of the people. And therefore, it will take its own time before it gets imbibed. Each one of us, whether as individuals, learned individuals, maybe NGOs, maybe organizations like DSCI, which have a direct connect with many of the different types of stakeholders, maybe government institutions, each one of us has a role to play. And I do believe government does have, I'll say, a lot of institutional capacities and programs to create awareness around these things. And so do the NGOs, so do the industry bodies like DSCI. And they will continue to play, and they should continue to play an active role, both by focused programs, by celebrating privacy days and weeks and something similar wherein maybe larger awareness can be created. And maybe taking certain things or through the real life experiences of why it is important and where exactly it is important. But being a social issue, it is also, I mean, understood that it will take its own time. The young generation will pick up faster, and that's where they are also the impacted lot, by the way, I mean, the maximum impacted lot. So I do believe this is like process of osmosis. It will continue to happen, and the other side, which may not be aware today or is less densely populated, will continue to be more and more osmosis will take place, and it will get imbibed.
So you talked about,
But something which is so natural to us should also not be taken away just because there is a law and has to be implemented.
Absolutely. So you talked about, the importance of, let's say, something like a mass awareness campaign or mass celebration of privacy to, create that awareness. Something that we're focusing on at DSCI is privacy and AI, right? And that intersection. So just maybe, my last question to you will be about that intersection. And this is a very specific and recently evolved context of how privacy applies and how individuals' privacy is affected. So given the evolutionary pace of AI, how are you foreseeing it impacting privacy? And what maybe advice do you have for our listeners? Again, the average Indian internet user, what should they be aware about in terms of how AI tools, how they interact with AI tools, and how that affects their privacy? What should they be careful about?
Yeah, so AI at mass level is a new phenomena, fast-changing phenomena. One thing is very clear, that these AI platforms take a lot of your data, take a lot of data as available in the public domain to be able to train themselves. And therefore, it's important, number one, that our public presence should be as to what we should look like. or what we believe we should look like. Not everything which is available with us or which we believe is sensitive to us should be made public.
Mm.
The law, by the way, permits something which you make available to be maybe used for training purposes. The other important factor is, particularly in the context of GNI, because that's one which is the most prevalent as of today, the way we ask questions, the prompts, and therefore it's important that as the users of such AI platforms, we avoid personal details being shared. At the end of the day, the platforms are designed to respond to every query that you ask, but the same data which you are asking and the response which you are getting is also being used for the training purposes.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's always better to avoid such personal related questions. And that's the message which we will like to give to the users, that while the companies do talk of ethical and responsible AI principles being followed by them, it equally applies to the users, whether in a B2B environment, or in a G environment, government environment, or in a consumer environment, citizen environment, that they also be sensitive of what is the query, what's the prompt that they are asking from the platform, from the chatbot, or whichever way the interaction is happening.
Thank you, sir, for that. I think that encapsulates the message that we want to drive, not just, yes, in the context of AI, but for privacy and data protection is in general, right? Yes, of course, the primary responsibility is with the entities that are taking your personal data and providing you services. But as a citizen, as an individual, it's also your imperative to be more aware about your privacy, what kind of personal data you're sharing, how it is being used. So, you know, general awareness and building your knowledge and just curiosity around that is such an important message. So thank you for that. I think that encapsulates
the message. Yeah, maybe I'd just like to also convey, privacy in India has been declared as a fundamental right. So as citizen, you have the right. But as the Constitution desires, requires that you also be mindful of your responsibilities.
Absolutely.
So it's important, therefore, that there is always a balance of what the rights are versus what your duties are. And if those are understood, and if the companies, if the organizations, industry bodies like DSEI are able to convey this spirit in totality, I hope that goes in a long way to ensure an open, safe, secure, and trusted internet.
Thank you, sir. That's a perfect note to end our discussion on. Thank you so much for joining us today, sir.
Thank you.
Thank you to our listeners for tuning in, and we'll see you next time. Thank you.